Welcome back. It's a great treat to have on the phone, Paula. Is it Froehlich, Paula? I can't remember.
Sure. Yes, Froehlich.
Sure. Good enough. Close enough. Paula is the co-founder with Steve Cohen of Chicago Media Project, which puts on, this is the ninth year for the Doc 10 Film Festival. I must tell you, Paula, we met at a party not long ago, and I said, wow, I'd really like to write about this, which I'll be doing in Tuesday's paper. I picked at random three of the films that you're going to be, of these something like 10 films you're going to be showing. How many films? 10 films.
And was, 10 films and 10 shorts.
And was literally blown away by all of them. What is the process for selecting the shows that are going to be in the Doc 10? How does that work? I'm sure you get hundreds of submissions, yes?
Well, so we actually work with Anthony Kaufman, who mm-hmm. is a local programmer. He's also involved with the Chicago International. And throughout the year, both Anthony and I and Steve, we really come across literally hundreds of documentaries. And the process for us, because there are only 10 slots, mm-hmm. is that we get together and come up with a short list of ones that we think are good contenders. And then Anthony and I kind of fight like brother-sister over those 10 slots to determine which films we really want to invite and share with the Chicago audiences. It's not easy. There's so much great documentary content these days that narrowing it down to just 10 is definitely the hardest part of the job.
I cannot even imagine. This must be, because it certainly seems to me, and tell me I'm wrong, this is becoming, if it is not already, a golden age for documentaries. Am I being hyperbolic?
No, it's really been, I'd say, you know, since CMP started 10 years ago,
yeah.
I'd say within the last 8 to 10 years, it's been really truly a golden age where, I mean, I remember before we began, I would mention to people that I was in documentary films, I was a documentary filmmaker, and their eyes would kind of glaze over. And then
no, and it starts snoring. I mean, you know, I used to be the, they'd go... I used to be a TV critic for some years for the Tribune, and so saw a lot of documentaries. And I think in many ways, Ken Burns sort of elevated the notion of documentary, though not every documentary can be 10 parts. But I too, have noticed that, and perhaps it's because one reason I think, Paula, the reason I'm going to tell you is that I think people are sick of films that are about strange superheroes with superhuman strength.
Yeah.
And they really crave stories about people, real people.
Yes, I think that the drama that's inherent in everybody's lives, you know, that really find grounding, they find emotional connection, they learn about things that and people they may not have known before. And I think they also, documentaries, because they are 90 minutes long, they can go behind the headlines and actually give you an experience with the individuals who are involved in, you know, major cultural stories and issues in a way that just a quick headline on your phone or something you're reading on the train just can't quite give you that perspective. So I do think it's that. I do think it's a reaction to a lot of kind of middling content that
we're
exposed to in the narrative world. But I also think there's a component, I think if we're all being honest in the documentary world, we have a little bit of a nod to reality television, training people to watch what goes on in other people's lives. I'm not saying...
So you're not saying that the films in your selection this year are inspired by The Bachelor, for instance. I hope that's not what you're saying.
I hope not.
Yeah.
But I think that the introduction of reality television started to introduce the idea that real people's lives can be fascinating sources for great films. And so the documentary space elevates that idea. And then over the course of the last 10 years, I think there have been a lot of corporation of elements from narrative storytelling, from
sure.
fiction films, that have found their way into documentaries. And so it's not that they're fictionalizing the story. They'll use things like animation and some motion graphics and some very sophisticated reenactments that then bring people into the film in a way that gets them to think, wow, I didn't realize documentaries could be so engaging.
I've got no. I literally have to believe that that's what people say to themselves walking out of the Siskel Film Center or the Davis Theater over the May 2nd to the 5th. You also with the co-founder Steve Cohen and the Chicago Media Project. You are in the business of helping get some documentary filmmakers from idea to screen. Are you not?
Yes, we are. We finance and mentor filmmakers. That's how, when we founded, that was our initial goal, was to bring together a group of like-minded people who love documentary film and believe in the power of media to bring about change in the world.
Now,
so we support films that are great stories first,
mm-hmm.
and then within that story, there's a social issue or a social cause, but what's going to bring somebody to a great film is the narrative story.
No question. No question.
Or people are involved, yes.
No question. Keep talking.
So
I love listening to you talk.
We've supported over 80 films.
Really?
In the last 10 years, and we've done it both through granting through our nonprofit as well as investing through our equity fund. We had a film called Icarus that won an Oscar in 2015. I'm trying to think of this year's Doc 10. We have supported a couple of them, but it's not our goal with Doc 10 is independent of the films that CMP supports. What we really want to do is find the best of the best and bring a rich and diverse experience to audiences in Chicago.
Well, you've
and these are films that have not been streaming anywhere else, so it's the first chance to see them and to see them in a movie theater, which is
You've certainly done that for me. I picked, you know, three of the 10, just at random, just because I said, well, who would make a movie? Literally, the way I did it, I said, who would make a movie about Devo? I did not get to see what I believe will be the, if not the most popular, at least the most intriguing, is the called Super/Man, the Christopher Reeve story. You've obviously seen that. Can you give me your review, please?
No, I think it's an incredibly compelling film, not dissimilar to Still, the Michael J. Fox movie last year that we opened the festival with, and that, you know, looking at issues of disability through the lens of Christopher Reeve's experience, and to see the transformation in him from Hollywood actor to activist.
Yeah.
And to see from the inside out the kind of compelling story of his life. I mean, it's incredibly moving.
So I'll bet.
Thrilled to be able to screen that on Friday night.
I'll bet. You open with, well, if you can hold on, I know we had some problems with the phone, but you sound just fine on the phone, Paula Frohley.
Okay.
And if you can hold on, I'd like to get your review of a couple other of these films, especially to, you would just affirm my my latent critical ability when it comes to film and documentary. But I think you were so right about this being a... We're in the middle of some kind of golden age for documentaries, and I think it's only going to get more shiny as we go on. So, ladies and gentlemen.
Totally agree.
Hold on for a couple minutes, ladies and gentlemen, and Paula Frohley and I will review some more movies for you. Welcome back. I am on the telephone with Paula Frohley, who co-founded the Chicago Media Project with Steve Cohen, and they put on the Doc 10 Film Festival. This is the ninth year. How, if I can ask you, Paula, before we get into the specifics of the frankly amazing films you have this year? I've seen three, and I can obviously vouch for the Christopher Reeve on your take on it. How were the crowds? How did you cope with COVID?
Good question. Well, I mean, certainly when it hit, we were really scrambling to figure out how we could keep doing it. So we did drive-ins, which were fantastic.
Oh, that sounds great.
It was fantastic. There was a really great pop-up drive-in just on the south side of the city. They were doing community screenings almost every night, and so we partnered with them. Our opening night, I believe in 2020 was, or 2021, actually, was Summer of Soul, went on to win the Oscar.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Movie.
Yeah.
Fantastic film. Also screened All These Sons by Oscar-nominated Bing Liu, made a blank on his Oscar-nominated
film. Don't worry.
The drive-ins were a fantastic solution to keeping people separate and safe, but also communally enjoying a film projected on a giant screen, which is, you know, ultimately as a filmmaker,
yes, that's what you want. So, and I think I'm very fond of the Davis Theater and the Cisco Film Center. You can get all the... People out there listening can get all the information you want at DOC and then 10, the number 10.org. It's very easy. You can get little synopses of these films. I will tell you, I was not terribly enthusiastic about seeing Devo, a film about that strange band of my, not so much youth, of my young adulthood. I was not a big fan. Man, do I like these guys. Man, did I.
I know, they're great.
Man, it was a great revelation. I thought, oh, man, did I miss this? Because I would have been, I was much more active and lively when I was in my early 20s. That's a fabulous, fabulous movie. And I think a lot of people.
All the wall fun.
Yeah, they aren't just fun. They're really smart, smart artists is what I think of them as. The other movie that quite moved me and was another revelation was a film called Copa 71. And I will tell you, people, you will watch it, and there is a series of elderly women's faces, much of it, coming and flashing across your screen, many of them smiling as they remember one of the great ignored stories in sports and in feminism. That, too, was a revelation to me, as it was, as you know, Paula, as it was to some of the great soccer players of contemporary fields. It was about it's like something out of 1984, where people tried to bury the first unofficial Women's World Cup, which was a sensation, the largest crowd in the history of women's sports at 110,000 people in Mexico City. That movie, I did not feel bad for the women who were interviewed, and there were a lot of them interviewed. I felt they were finally getting their due.
Absolutely. And I do think it highlights really something that documentaries can do, which is unearth these stories. And you watch it and you think, how did I not know about it? But rather, how did Brandi Chastain not know about
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
I love that the film opened. She's watching it. She thinks it's a male soccer game.
Yeah.
And then realizes it's women, and then realizes it's from 1971, and she is literally emotional about the fact that she never knew about this piece of history, because it was buried. Literally, it was not considered not a sanctioned event. FIFA didn't sanction it, and consequently, buried it because the fear was that it superseded crowd sizes
of men. I know. Well, FIFA, you do about 8 documentaries about what's wrong with that organization. I can tell you that, but I don't. Yeah. I don't make documentaries. These guys come off as they've always come off as real idiots. Another film that I saw that was how shall I put this, Paula Frehley? I would call this chilling. War Game is the title of the film. Can you describe this for listeners, if you could?
Yeah.
I just found it so chilling and all too possibly real.
That's exactly right. Well, first off, so War Game is a film that is directed by Jesse Moss and Tony Gerber. And Jesse Moss has made some of the most amazing documentaries over the last handful of years. Boys State, Girls State, which was our preview documentary in April at the mm-hmm. sequel. Mayor Pete, which is a fantastic film about Pete Buttigieg and his run for office.
Sure.
He knows this field. So what War Game is about is it's a simulation of the January 6th insurrection, except this time the military are also on the side of the insurgents. And so they are role-playing what happens in the war room when something like that goes on. And so you have people, Steve Bullock, who's the former governor of Montana, Heidi Heitkamp, former senator of North Dakota. Steve Bullock plays the president. Heidi Heitkamp plays his sort of right-hand assistant. The retired Major General Linda Singh, national security expert. So these are like real people, civil servants who have been in these roles, and they are playing out against a time clock.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do if something like that were to happen? And so it cuts like a thriller.
Oh, no question.
While you're watching it, right? And so as you're watching it, like just the way in which the simulation is being cut together, your heart is already starting to beat faster.
Yeah.
And then as you're watching it, you realize, good Lord, this could have happened. This could still happen. You know, that what they are role-playing is not that far away from real possibility.
Well, because
so
you watch the film,
that added anxiety.
You watch the film, and then you turn on the news, and you see chaos on college and university campuses across the country. That is the power, ladies and gentlemen, of documentary filmmaking. Good documentary filmmaking. War Game will
put you in the middle of it.
Yep. It sure does. Because who knew that the crew got incredible access to something that very few people have had access to. You've heard, all of you, of war games, these simulated sort of battles and things that armies do and navies do. But this thing is, they're all, Paul, I have not seen all the films, but boy, just based on the three that I've seen, and they're so bad. The other thing is, Paul, the great thing, well, for really Devo, War Game, and Copa 71 are about as different as three films could possibly be, but they are all extraordinary. And I think that is the...
That's the common theme, a common thread through all 10 films. And, when we started Doc 10, we wanted to start a film festival. Steve and I were debating about whether we could handle it. And I said, let's just do 10 films. I mean, we can handle 10 films. How hard is that?
Yeah.
And so we did it in 2015. And afterwards, when we surveyed people, the number one thing they loved about it was that there were only 10 films. And that they knew that they might not know the movies, but they knew, because they had seen another movie that was excellent, that any film they chose to go to would be of the same caliber, the same level of excellence, and they loved it. And so from that point forward, I feel that it's 10 slots, and that's it.
And that's such a great idea. It's following the grand philosophy of less is more. I think if you could see all of these films, you would... your life might be changed, but I think if you can see any one of them, your life will be enriched. It's impossible.
Absolutely. And also we have a shorts program that has 10 really terrific short docs that nobody really gets to see very often. And on Saturday evening, we have an awards ceremony where we're honoring Roger Ross Williams, who's an incredible Oscar-winning documentarian, and Charlotte Cook, who is senior media acquisitions for The Guardian. So we're bringing in industry folk to honor them. It's really just a great weekend. At the Davis and at the Siskel.
Yep. Doc 10 is
great venue.
Doc10.org. doc10.org. Doc10. Paul, I'm glad we met at that party. I have every reason now to admire you more, and you will be featured in a story in the Tuesday Tribune, and I hope that helps get more people to Doc 10.
I hope you get to see the other 7 films.
Me too.
All great.
The 3 I've seen are fantastic. 4 stars, as Roger Ebert used to do. Paul, take care. Drive safe if you're in a car.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you very much. Take care.